These findings have significant implications for health journalists who are not diversifying their sources. While the study focuses on nurses, the findings also apply to health professionals other than physicians. Being visible in the media and to the media is important if nurses are to be considered as having an important and valued voice on healthcare issues. The nursing profession is the largest group of health professionals in the United States, numbering close to 3.5 million, and 90% of nurses are women. As the largest profession, we perhaps have a valuable perspective that can make a difference to the public. Thank you for joining us today on HealthCetera. You can find us on Little Water Radio, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out our blog at healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. See you next time. And in print media, healthcare coverage hasn't improved with time. On May 8th, the high-level findings of the study were reported at a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Dr. Pamela Jeffries, Dean of George Washington University School of Nursing, opens the press conference.
Good morning. On behalf of the George Washington University Center for Health Policy and Media Engagement, I would like to welcome you to the Woodhull Study Revisited, Nurses' Representation in Health News Media. It is great to be joined by journalists as well as colleagues from various nursing organizations and associations, in addition to the funders who supported this critical study. George Washington University is proud to play a strong role in shaping and reporting policy and in educating students, the public, and others around policy development and advocacy efforts. The GW School of Nursing, compelled by the belief that all people deserve quality health care, aspires to be the trusted advocates for the advancement of society well-being in the clinic, community, and statehouse. Therefore, in alignment with this vision, the GW School of Nursing Center for Health Policy and Media Engagement has replicated the original study published in 1998 to determine if there's any progress has been made in the use of nurses as sources and experts in the reporting of health news and policy by journalists. I want to thank you again for joining us this morning for this very important presentation. At this time, I would like to introduce my colleague, Dr. Diana Mason, who is the principal investigator of the study.
Thank you. And that was the Dean of the School of Nursing at George Washington University, Dean Pamela Jeffries. And thank you, Dean Jeffries, for your support of this work. I would like to first welcome all of you in person at the National Press Club. And for those of you online, welcome to this press conference. And if you look at the lower left-hand corner of your screen, you'll see a button that says Ask the Question. You can type in a question at any time, and we will get to as many of those questions as we can later in the hour. For those of you in the room, there is a note card. You can write down your question on that note card, pass them in over to the aisle, and if that person at the end seat would just hold them up, someone will collect them. I do want to acknowledge our many funders for this study, some of whom are in this room. We greatly appreciate your support. This study would not have been possible without your coming forth and providing grants, unrestricted grants for this study. Thank you very much. So, why did we do this study? Well, first, we know that diversity in journalism is key to excellence in journalism. And when we talk about diversity, we mean diversity in newsrooms, diversity in topics, and diversity of sources. The Center for Women in Government, the Women's Media Center, and some other entities have been tracking women's representation in media over time. And the Women's Media Center most recent data reports that 24% of newsroom staff are women. Only 36% of sources in news stories are women. And 48% of sources in health news stories have been reported to be women. So, what does this mean for nurses? Well, we are 90% women. And we are the largest group of health professionals in the country. There are at least 3.5 million of us. And so, are we represented to the same extent as women in general in media? So the original Woodhull study was interested in this question of nurses' representation in the media. It was published in 1998 by Sigma Theta Tau International, Nursing Honorary Society. It was designed and co-directed by Junior Bridge and co-directed by Jane Kirschling and Sheila Ryan, who were both at the University of Rochester School of Nursing at the time. It was named after Nancy Woodhull, who was a founding editor of USA Today. She was very concerned about women's representation in journalism, and she was also interested in this study deeply, but she died in April of 1997 before the results could be published. It was named appropriately after Nancy Woodhull. This original study looked at all news stories that were published in September of 1997 in two leading national newspapers, five metro daily newspapers, three general interest weeklies, one business weekly, and five health industry trade publications such as Modern Healthcare. Nurses were quoted in only 4% of quotations in newspapers, and 1% of the time in weeklies and in our own trade publications, like Modern Healthcare. Nurses were never cited in news stories on health policy, and they were rarely identified in photos accompanying the articles. So, 20 years later, where are we? And that's what we sought to find out. And so today, we're presenting preliminary high-level findings on three phases of replication and extension of the Woodhull study. More detailed analyses will be available in peer-reviewed papers in the coming months, and they will be posted on the George Washington School of Nursing webpage on a designated page for Woodhull, and that website URL is go.gwu.edu/Woodhull, and it will be shown on the screen throughout the presentation. So we had three phases to this study. The first is to actually do the replication of the original Woodhull study. Are nurses represented more often today than they were in 1997 as sources in these news publications? Phase two was we were interested, regardless of what we found and what journalists' experiences were with using nurses as sources, including what they saw as facilitators and barriers to using nurses as sources. And then phase three arose from our colleague, Kim Acquaviva at the School of Nursing, who said to us, why not look at the tweets of the top 50 schools of nursing and see if that can provide some more detail and another level of explanation for the findings that we have. And so that is phase three of this study. So we'll start with the actual replication, phase one of the Woodhull study. These are the authors of that study. We partnered with the Berkeley Media Studies Group. They do these kinds of analyses all the time and worked with them on the design and the analysis of the data. Laura Nixon is the senior media researcher at Berkeley Media Studies Group, and she will present those findings, followed by Christy Westphan, who will present on the photo and image analysis. Lauren.
Thank you, Diana. Now, before I dive into the findings, I want to say a word about the methods that we used to replicate the original study. To the extent that we could, we used the exact same sources as were used in the 1997 study, aside from a couple that are no longer in print or where the archives were very difficult to access. In 1997, they looked at all healthcare articles in these publications. For our study, we took a 1/5 sample, and so they had about 2,000 articles. We ended up looking in depth at about 500 articles. As Diana mentioned, in 1997, they found that nurses were rarely quoted in healthcare news, 4% in newspapers and 1% in weekly news magazines and health industry publications. And what we found in our study is that, unfortunately, that picture really has not changed. We found that nurses accounted for only 2% of quotes in healthcare articles in newspapers, and similar to 1997, 1% in weekly news magazines and healthcare industry publications. So nothing, they tended to be only talking about nurses, not any of the other healthcare issues where their expertise and experience might have a bearing. And this is an example of one of those types of quotes. And so this is from Pam Cipriano, the president of the American Nursing Association, in an article about the dangers faced by nursing. And she says, there has been an erosion of respect. We have to dispel that notion that being assaulted is just part of the job. It is not. Now, in addition to looking at who was quoted in the news articles, we were also interested in, okay, drawing a broader net, if we look not just at when are nurses quoted, but when are they even mentioned in healthcare news stories, either nurses or the nursing profession itself. And indeed, we found that when we looked a little bit broader at that, it's a little bit higher percentage. So if you look at any time nurses or nursing is mentioned in healthcare news articles, that is, that's 13% of the article, so a little bit higher. And we found that they were most likely to appear to be mentioned in articles about healthcare quality or public health issues. So this is an example of a article in Modern Healthcare where there was reporting on some research. So pairing a primary care physician with a registered nurse, two medical assistants, and a nurse practitioner or a resident physician has led to better conditions and reduced reliance on the emergency department. And so this is an article where nurses are mentioned, but they're not quoted. And one place where nurses were conspicuously absent, where they were neither mentioned nor quoted, was in news about healthcare policy. So you might remember September 2017. This was during the time when the repeal of the Affordable Care Act was being debated. So there were tons of stories about healthcare policy, but nurses were almost entirely absent. They were only mentioned in 4% of stories about healthcare policy during this time. And finally, I want to say a word about gender, not just in terms of nurses, but in terms of all of the speakers, all of the sources used in healthcare news. As Diana mentioned, gender is a big issue since nurses are 90% female. So we wanted to look at what was found. And so in the 1997 study, they had found that women accounted for 25% of sources, of quotes, in healthcare news stories. And what we found when we replicated this was that that picture has changed, but not by much. So women have gone from accounting for a quarter of quotes in healthcare news articles to accounting for one-third of quotes in news articles. So there's been some progress, but there's still quite a discrepancy. And with that, I will turn the mic over to Christy, who's going to be talking about the analysis that she did of the images associated with these articles. Thank you.
So you've heard a little bit about what we found for the results in the print media, and my portion of the study was looking at the photographs and images and analyzing those. So we did a randomized sample of 527 photographs and images, and from that we further categorized them if they had a person or a non-person within that. We looked at gender and additionally their role in healthcare. From that, we found that the roles that were most prevalent in the photographs and in the images were policymakers, patients and families, and unidentified clinicians. When we looked at the male-female ratio, you can see 49% of the photographs or images depicted men, and both does refer to images that included both men and women in those photographs. So, yes, nurses and women remain underrepresented in the images that we analyzed, and politicians, white males, patients, families, and unidentified clinicians in white coats or scrubs were most commonly depicted within the results.
Thank you. You can go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you. Good. So I just want to point out a couple limitations of the study. One is that nurses are likely represented at a higher level, but we don't know it because nurses are not identified in news stories, largely because of editorial styles. Most of the newsroom's styles that are used require that you cannot say RN, that if you use PhD at all, most will not. You do not refer to that person as doctor. Only the physician is referred to as a doctor, and they are identified as an MD. And they're very likely to be represented or to be identified as an MD, but it's almost impossible to identify the RN by an RN credential if it's not already saying in the title that it's a nurse. However, these editorial styles haven't changed much over the last 20 years, and so we don't think it's that much different from 20 years ago. We have made a little bit of progress. Some of us were working, really pushing the New York Times, for example, to, in the letters to editor, to at least say in the byline from the person who wrote the letter that it's a registered nurse. So there is a little bit of progress, but not much. So we don't expect that there's much of a difference between the 97 data and the data today. And finally, we examined only the print sources that were used in the original Woodhull study. Of course, this day and of online media, there's all kinds of news sources that are only online, and it would be a very interesting follow-up study to look at whether they do any differently in terms of using nurses as sources. So the conclusion of this phase one of the study is nurses remain invisible in health news stories. So we then were interested in journalists' experiences with interviewing nurses, using nurses as sources, and these are the co-authors of phase two of this study. What we were looking at was what do health journalists perceive to be barriers and facilitators to using nurses as sources. And we did this through a qualitative approach, semi-structured interviews with 10 health news journalists, only two of whom were men, which is also in itself interesting. Telephone interviews were done. They were recorded for 30 to 60 minutes, and they were transcribed. And then the team of the three researchers, we each did separate analyses, came together, developed quickly, came to consensus on what the themes were for this study. It was pretty clear cut. So I want to share with you what the major high-level finding was and then some sub-themes. So the major overall theme was the biases about women nurses and positions of power in the healthcare system can get in the way of journalists using diverse sources in health reporting. Now for the sub-themes, I want to start with a really important one. The journalists told us when we use nurses as sources, we get an important perspective and it enriched the reporting. However, journalists don't fully understand the range of nurses' roles, works, and education. Journalists may value diverse sources, but they often don't know how to find nurses to interview, and they don't have time to track them down these days. Communication staffs of healthcare organizations like hospitals and universities, including academic medical centers, never offer up nurses as sources unless the journalist specifically asks for a nurse, and even if they ask, they may not get the nurse. And the editorial biases, as I mentioned, the editorial styles play a major role, but also things like the reporter having to justify using a nurse in a story as a source to their editor, when they almost never have to justify using a physician. And then this is really important for those of us in the profession. Nurses in our associations and our organizations aren't strategic about engaging journalists, and neither are our nursing journals. We were told they never receive press releases from nursing journals. They do from medical journals. So those are findings from what journalists told us, and now we're going to hear about what the top 50 schools of nursing are doing with Twitter. Kim Aquaviva.
Thanks so much. So this ties in very much with the first and second phase of the Woodhull study and trying to explain why is it that nurses are not being quoted and why a lot of their quotes tend to be more inward facing. For this part of the study, I looked at the Twitter accounts from the top 50 schools of nursing using the U.S. News & World Report 2017 list of nursing schools with master's degree programs. Of those 50 schools, 47 of them had public active Twitter accounts. I was looking at tweets between September 29th, 2016 and February 22nd, 2018. And really, these are the most recent 3,200 tweets from these schools. Collectively, those 47 schools had over 100,000 followers, and so this analysis also looked at their followers. And all of the coding and analysis was done using R. So there were over 31,000 tweets that met the date inclusion criteria, and about half of them, around 15,000, contained hashtags. Of the ones that contained hashtags, there were 11,143 that had hashtags. In general, there were 84 hashtags that got used quite often. And those 84 hashtags were actually used across 74% of all of the tweets. So schools of nursing using the same hashtags over and over again. So it was interesting to see, what are those hashtags about? So I coded them down into six categories and then subcoded them into inward-facing or outward-facing. So inward-facing hashtags are hashtags that are speaking to the nursing community. Hashtag nurses week, hashtag go nursing. School-specific hashtags, for example, GW, hashtag GWU. So hashtags that are very, very specific to the school. And then outward-facing hashtags are things like hashtag pain or hashtag opioid. Overall, the inward-facing hashtags really were the large predominated among the hashtags that were used. And actually only 20% of hashtags were outward-facing. So if you imagine, a hashtag is a way to call people to follow and pay attention to something you're saying. And so schools of nursing are using Twitter almost like an intranet to talk to each other and not to talk to other people. I looked at the followers. The 47 schools had over 100,000 followers collectively. 58,000, around 58,000 of these were unduplicated user accounts. So quite a few people follow all of these schools of nursing, which was fascinating. I ran an R script to try to detect who are reporters or members of the media. This is complicated because our definition of media has changed. So the R script detected words like media, news, TV, radio, reporter. I did not use blogger, but one could actually expand this to include bloggers. That initial coding yielded 1,718 accounts, and then I manually coded all of them to determine what kind of member of the media they were. And when you look at those followers, here's what's really interesting. Only 668 of all of those people who follow schools of nursing are members of the media, even loosely interpreted. This includes people who work at the school paper, at the school radio station. This is around 1%. So schools of nursing are using hashtags to talk to each other, and reporters, journalists, and other members of the media, not surprisingly, aren't following, because schools of nursing aren't speaking beyond their small group. So I'd like to introduce Barbara Glickstein.
Good morning. The Woodhill Revisited conclusions, then, in summary, are nurses remain invisible in health news stories, with no progress being made during the past 20 years. Improving health reporting is dependent upon addressing the barriers to using nurses as sources. Doing so requires actions by newsrooms, journalists, communications, PR staff in healthcare organizations and universities, and nursing organizations. Future research should examine nurses' representation in online health news media. I'd like to remind those in the room, if you have a question regarding the study results, to please fill out your question and pass it towards the door. And those who are watching and live stream, please go and now push that question button, and we will be taking questions. With that, I invite the panelists who are now going to be providing a reaction to the study findings about the Woodhull Revisited study. I welcome Krista Williams Chancellor, Director of Marketing at the Women's Media Center here in Washington, D.C. Yannick Rice Lamb, Chair, Department of Media Journalism and Film at Howard University, and Ivan Oransky, President, Association for Healthcare Journalists. And I welcome Ms. Kristen Williams Chancellor to please begin with her reaction. Would you like to come to the podium, please?
Good morning. I was
interested in finding out the survey results, and particularly how it compared to 20 years ago, 1997, and to see that there were very little growth, actually no growth, in the representation of nurses in media. And that yields some parallels to what we have found at the Women's Media Center. Our organization is dedicated to making women more visible and powerful in media, because women are 51% of the population, yet remain unrepresented in media. Women right now, with all platforms and media, are only 38% of what you see on the images, the bylines, the subjects, and the sources in media. We were not very much surprised, although disheartened, to find out that numbers haven't changed for nurses as well. One of the interesting findings was from your study and from the work that we do at the Women's Media Center, is that while women make up the majority of a certain topic in this area, women are 90% of nurses, that men still are the predominant faces and images and sources in media. At the Women's Media Center, we did a survey, a report actually, looking at campus rape and sexual assault, and a separate report on reproductive rights. And while those subjects pertain and impact women more so than they do men, we found that the stories were still largely written by and sourced by men. For example, of the 12 largest newspapers that we studied, 32% of those who were quoted in stories about rape and sexual assault were men. So obviously there is a lot of work to be done. The challenge is to make more nurses more visible in media. Nurses are primarily women, and the Women's Media Center is dedicated to making sure that that is part of the narrative, because our media cannot be representative, inclusive, and credible if it does not include the voices of women. And the same can be said of the nursing industry, because women obviously are the majority by far. And I would be particularly interested in finding out more about what the strategies are moving forward, and how to bridge the gap between that big gender gap between the representation of women nursing and the images that you see on the television, radio, and print screens. So I will leave it there, but I'm open to taking more questions and invite any other suggestions I will have at the end of this session as well. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm the daughter and sister of nurses, and also Nancy Woodhull is one of my first mentors. I met her when I was a sophomore at Ohio State, and I had an internship in Rochester when she was city editor. So it's an honor to be involved in this. One of the things that I think that journalists have to keep in mind also is that nurses are everywhere. They're not only in patient rooms, but they're also in the boardrooms. And they can talk about policy, they can talk about management, they can talk about finances, they can talk about utilization review, they can talk about all the things that we need to talk about as journalists when we're working on our stories. And as the survey indicated, we also need to ask for them that they be included as sources, and insist that we keep them as sources if they try to replace them with other people, with physicians in particular. And also, in terms of being good journalists and showing different points of view, it's important to interview nurses as well as physicians, as well as social workers, as well as the patients, so that we're telling the complete story. And we're not telling complete stories if we don't include nurses as part of that equation. And then in addition to making sure that we're talking, including women, and women aren't in the media as much as as that was reflected as well in terms of coverage, also in terms of some of the positions of decision-making positions in the media, but also thinking broadly about diversity. So I teach at Howard University. We have a school of nursing. So turning to HBCUs as sources, also turning to organizations like the National Black Nurses Association for sources as well. And for the nurses themselves, making sure that your voices are heard. As you can see from the study, making better use of social media so that you're not just talking to each other, but you're talking to other people, and that even your own campus media is listening to you as well as the broader media too in there. I think that it's also important to make sure that institutions are making nurses available and that we take care of that. And one of my, I have a confession, and the moral of that confession is listen to nurses and also listen to your mother. because for all of the things I said, I also missed a very important story if I had been paying more attention to my mother. And I did get a lot of, I've gotten a lot of ideas from my sister and from my mother over the years and some of the nurses that I've interacted with, like Barbara Glickstein here. But if I had paid more attention and connected the dots, I would have been at the forefront of the opioid crisis because I'm from Akron, Ohio, and Ohio is at the center of this. And a lot of the stories my mother was saying, some of her griping, some of her dinner table conversation or breakfast conversation, her own use of pain management, her own warnings to other people about their pain medication, the way she disowned someone who was like a son when he tried to get her to take medication from where she was working. So there, and then with the unemployment and underemployment with some of the factories there, there were a lot of signs that this was something that was brewing. And this was several years ago when this happened because she passed in 2014, so that tells you how long ago that those tea leaves were there for me to see, and I missed them. So again, the moral of that story, as I said, is listen to your mother and also listen to nurses. I look forward to hearing your questions. Thank you.
You're listening to Health Cetera on Little Water Radio.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here. I'm Ivan Oransky. I'm the president of the Association of Healthcare Journalists, and I also teach journalism at medical journalism, health journalism at NYU in New York. And I just want to sort of first thank our organizers for all the hard work they've done, of course, and for putting this together and for making sure that since I was on the panel, that we would not have, you know, yet another example of that terrible epidemic of women-only panels in this country. So I do appreciate that. Obviously, that's a joke, but it's also not very funny because, in fact, most of the time what we see is mannels, right, all male panels. And I think that's germane to what we're talking about today. Let me tell you a little bit about AHCJ because I want to make sure that, the Association of Healthcare Journalists, I want to make sure that everyone in the room and listening is aware of us and is aware of us as a resource, but also that you might be a resource to us and get to know one another better because I think that's a really key part of hopefully my message, and hopefully that makes sense. AHCJ, we're about 1,500 members strong, mostly here in the U.S., a smattering in other countries, all healthcare reporters. We're a little bit smaller than some of the other organizations of journalists you might have heard about because we have very, very strict requirements for membership. You have to be an active journalist. We have no issues with PR folks and what have you, but we want this to be a journalism-only organization. We, of course, partner with a lot of other organizations. We've been around 20 years. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary. We have a big annual conference every year. We have different, some of you may have been to that conference. I know some of you in the room have. Certainly those of you who are also journalists have been there. That's a great opportunity, but also we have a very active, I'll just say, since we're here in Washington, it's one of our most active chapters. And we have chapters around the country, New York, Boston, the places you'd imagine, Los Angeles, we have a South Florida chapter now. And it's a good opportunity, I think, for to get a tool, if you will, to get at some of the issues that I hope I can speak about here in a minute or two. One of the issues that we have sort of grappled with at AHCJ and that all journalists do and all journalism organizations do, and I certainly have as a manager in a somewhat past life of newsrooms, is diversity in newsrooms. And it's actually a very, you heard earlier that this is an issue and it remains an issue. It's actually, there as is always the case, of course, as you dive deeper, there are some interesting nuances. Again, I've been teaching at NYU for 16 years now. And I've never had a class that was majority male. And in fact, typically, our classes are about a dozen, you know, and typically, I mean, if we had four men in the class, that was a lot. So what has happened, obviously, I'm not going to get into, you all probably know what's happening better than I do. In management, you don't see a lot of women right now. And Nancy Woodhull was an exception then, would even be a bit of an exception today. But in health and science journalism, which is my focus, actually, that on that axis, and I don't want to sort of glorify the rest of the axes that we really need to be paying attention to, but on that axis, you know, health and medical journalism are doing okay, and I don't want to, you know, overstate that, but there is actually some diversity, which should you know, I don't mean to say that, you know, journalists are not always making every objective, you know, independent choice that they can. We do our best. But at the end of the day, well, why aren't more women being quoted in those stories if actually the people writing those stories and doing broadcasts are women? That sort of, I think that's a question we need to grapple with. So that's what you see certainly in our membership at HCJ. You certainly see in the program that I teach in at NYU. So clearly journalists need to do better. And one of the messages that I take from these findings is that, and you heard this earlier from in a few different ways, we tend to, and I put myself in this category too, I don't do a lot of daily reporting anymore, but we tend to sort of just go to, if we need a source quickly, we go to organizations like medical schools, typically almost exclusively medical schools. Maybe we go to a society like American Cancer Society. I think, as you all know, the leadership there is, I think, not exclusively, but almost exclusively male. And so that's just not surprising. I'm not saying it's a good thing. It's not a good thing. It's not surprising. So journalists need to do better, and we need to go to more diverse sources on many axes. And I'm going to encourage certainly our members to do that, and I know that a lot of them are already thinking about that. And if for no other reason than what we heard just a moment ago from Yannick about, well, you're missing stories. I mean, if you don't believe in diversity for diversity's sake, which I happen to, but if you don't believe in diversity for diversity's sake, well, then, okay, don't be altruistic. Just sort of do something that's good for you, which is go get stories. You're missing them if you're not talking to more diverse people. But I would say also, and I would urge maybe at the risk of giving advice, unsolicited advice, but I'm standing here, so I'll do that. I think that medical schools need to sort of take a step back and think about what their real goals are in terms of their PR efforts. I mean, I will say this about 100 different things they do, and I'm going to zero in today just on the notion that they should be working more closely together with the nursing schools. The expertise that a nursing professor, you know, has, a research professor, someone like that, is really quite valuable. And journalists will know that if you put it in front of them. Not everyone, but I think most people will. It'll seep its way in. Medical schools, because they know they're going to be the first port of call, you know, maybe they ought to work together a little bit. There are lots of interesting programs that they could, you start generally, you know, medical schools are going to start by promoting their own work, okay, but promote the work of the whole university, promote the whole work of the whole school. I would urge them to do that. So that's one thing I would sort of suggest and think about. And the inward facing that we heard from Christy is really, to me, again, not surprising, but it's really smacks you in the face a little bit. You have this, notion that you're really just talking to other nurses, that you're talking to other nursing schools, you're talking to other faculty. I mean, I'm not saying that's not important, but that's actually an internal communications role. None of that is going to get you quoted. It's not going to get any of your faculty quoted, et cetera. So really think about who the audiences are. And then finally, I would just like to sort of urge nurses themselves, whether they're working, in Akron, Ohio, I guess, where your mom is. And all of that, or they're working at nursing schools, make yourselves available. And what I mean by that is not just sort of say, hey, I'm here. I mean, do that. There's nothing wrong with it. But think about a relationship with reporters. There's something actually that I think I really try and stress with my students, and it goes both ways. There's a saying on Twitter, people say, what percentage of my tweets should be about myself, what have you. At the highest level, be useful. So go to reporters with stories that aren't necessarily about you or aren't even about your own nursing school, your own, facility, your own hospital. Interesting story that's happening. That reporter will be your best friend so that when you do call, right, he or she is going to pick up the phone. And when he or she needs a source on deadline, guess who they're going to call? Because you actually answer your cell phone. Like, you don't have to answer your cell phone all the time. But, I'm sorry, but unfortunately deadlines are what they are. We can talk about media training, which I have mixed feelings on, but the point is develop relationships with reporters and really do that as best you can. So again, I just want to come back to AHCJ. Please work with us. I'm happy to speak to any of you today or at any time, or to our executive director, Len Verzis, who actually, Nancy Woodhull is one of his mentors too, it turns out. Len was at USA Today at the very beginning. I think the phrase he used when I was talking about this with him was, he got the call from her, and that was getting called up to the majors. And so this means a lot to all of us, and I hope we can all work together on this. Thank you.
I want to thank our reaction panel and welcome questions. I want to also thank who's Liz Siegert, who was also on the National Advisory Council for this study, who is helping us both field questions from our live stream audience and questions from here in the room. So we're ready for your first question, Liz Siegert, if you would please give us that first question.
Sure. First question is, in response to findings that journalists have a hard time accessing nurses and vice versa, what are some solutions to bridging that gap to see more nursing representations in news stories?
All right, I'm also going to invite questions to be answered by our researchers, and I'd like Dr. Diana Mason to please field this answer. Thank you.
So we are going to have a dissemination and action plan, particularly when the other published papers come out on this. But we've already talked about the fact that nursing, for example, schools of nursing, chief nurse officers of healthcare organizations need to meet with their PR departments and talk about, here are the people who we have who are experts, and you should be offering them up for these kinds of stories. And not just do this once, but meet with them on a regular basis. What is the feature, who is the person, or what is the topic you're going to feature this month, for example, or this week? And so it's really having the conversations about the findings of the study and the fact that the university or the hospital needs to step up and be putting forth nurses as experts. Now, Barbara and I know that nurses are afraid to answer that call from journalists. And while I know you have mixed feelings about media training, we're now framing it as nurses need to have media competencies. And we know from media training we've done with nurses that many nurses are afraid to talk to journalists. So we would recommend that the deans of schools of nursing and the chief nurse officers get to help their leaders who are clinical experts to actually develop those media competencies. And if your PR departments aren't prepared to help with that, there are others such as us who would be prepared to do that.
If I could also mention, the Women's Media Center recognizes that women are underrepresented as sources in media, and that women oftentimes are not quite comfortable being in front of the camera or being talking to reporters. And so we have created two projects that address that. Our She Source is a database of women who can speak about pretty much any topic, from nursing to affordable health care to politics to you name it, we have an expert. We have 1,400 experts. Kate McCarthy, who runs our She Source project, I asked her how many nurses are in that database, and she says there are about four. So we do welcome an opportunity for nurses to talk to the Women's Media Center and become experts, so that when there is a breaking news story or just anyone in the media looking for nurses who are experts, that we can direct them to a nurse who is competent and ready to speak to the media. And not only are nurses afraid of talking to the media, but in general, a lot of people are afraid of talking to the media. Recognizing that, we created the Progressive Women's Voices, which is our media training, which we also have found that has been very useful, because many of those who have gone through our training, it's a three-day intensive training with a expert who talks about not only how to create your message, how to make sure that your message is succinct, how to get it to the right audience, and to be comfortable in front of the camera or just with any member of the media. And so I do encourage the Nurses Association and nursing schools and other permeations to make sure that if they're not getting training from the Women's Media Center, that there is some kind of training that helps make your members more comfortable in talking to the media, because it's a two-way street. So there has to be some level of nurses raising their hand to say, yes, I'm willing to talk and I'm ready to talk.
Any other additional comments on that question?
I just kind of want to reiterate what Ivan said too, because journalists in reality don't bite. At least a lot of them don't. And as he was saying, it's a conversation and it's a relationship. And once you build it, look at it that way, it makes it a lot easier. So, you know, journalists need information about things that are going on, and nurses have information that they want to share.
If I may add as well that there is brilliant research being published by nurses in nursing journals, and the idea that press advisories are not going out or not going out about your study doesn't mean that you cannot figure out how to frame that research finding into a newsworthy frame so that the public can benefit from the rich research and the important research that nursing is doing. Conversations with some preliminary conversations about some of our smaller nursing journals had to do with the fact that they're really, many of the staff is volunteer, it's quite cumbersome and already overburdened in terms of time constraints, and suggestion has arose that perhaps some of the nursing journals can get together and figure out how they can begin to support each other to teach the research, published research nurses how to write a press advisory and support the work to get their own work out. So I think it's another area that is being missed and the public's not benefiting from what we are doing in terms of our nursing research. I'm ready for another question. Thank you, Liz.
Okay. Is Twitter the best place to make the expertise of nurses and nurse leadership known, or is there another way to do that effectively?
I'm assuming that's a social media question. Kim, would you like to field that?
So I hesitate to say that any one platform is the best place. I think Twitter is a place and needs to be used strategically. So schools of nursing, if they want to get attention and want to be able to get their nurses, whether it's faculty or students or alumni, into the media, use hashtags that are aligned with current events. So when things are going on in the news about the opioid epidemic, a school of nursing can tweet out using the hashtag opioid and point to the work of a faculty member. I think it's important to recognize both the benefits and limitations of any social media platform and also think about the age range of the people who are using that. So you may want to cover Facebook and Twitter, and so different social media platforms. And then just echoing what others have said, make those connections with members of the media directly. If you're on social media and you're on Twitter, reach out to journalists. Direct message journalists. Have conversations. You would be amazed at the connections you can make that way and how accessible people are.
Use a mix. A lot of people use Instagram. If you have visuals that you could put, have a YouTube channel. Making sure you're following a lot of people. A lot of journalists do use Twitter to look for things, and a lot of media companies use Facebook a lot because it still has an extensive reach, no matter what age group you're going after. But I'd say be everywhere and to make sure that you're following people as well as having them follow you.
I just want to add that most journalists are on Twitter, but you know, a multi-pronged approach is always good, not just social media, but also just a general strategic plan on media engagement. And just to echo that, the relationship building, I think, is essential. And because journalists are oftentimes on deadline and don't have the luxury of being on deadline and trying to, you know, find the best source, it's best to build those relationships when they're off deadline. So call them up and say, can I have coffee with you? And just get to know them. And if there is a topic that a journalist contacts you about and you don't feel comfortable or don't have the expertise, please refer someone that is an expert or who can address that additional issue, because that's going to be helpful not only to you and to the nurses, but also to the journalists.
Also give journalists feedback on their work. So you might retweet their stories. If you like their stories, let them know that you like it. If it's you feel that someone you know wasn't included in there or there's a missing angle, you know, let them know that too. The next time you look at this topic, that so-and-so would be a good person to talk to, or that I have expertise in this area. So that's always helpful as well.
I'd like to add a comment by a health reporter who said it's really great when she interviews anyone, and particularly nurses who have great stories, that at the end of the scheduled interview for the topic on that she's called them, if you say to that journalist, are you interested in any other storylines? I have a few other ideas. For a freelance journalist, that's gold. So if you have the storylines and you have that opportunity, if they don't have to immediately get off the phone or off Skype, wherever you're being interviewed, she suggested very strongly that you put that sentence in there and then be sure you have a couple of good stories so that they can then follow up. And I think, as Crystal said, if you can't do it, have a list of colleagues who are capable of doing it. If you're getting on an airplane to go somewhere, but you know a colleague who'd be very happy to be called by this journalist, make an agreement amongst each other that you will do that for each other, both within your work experience as well as in your collegial relationships. Liz, do we have another question?
Yes. What is the preparation that nurses receive in their nursing program training to work with the press and about policy in general?
Can you repeat that?
Came from a non-nurse.
Playing with this thing here. Go ahead.
I'm guessing that question came from a non-nurse.
Can you say it again?
What is the preparation, if any, that nurses receive in their nursing program and training to work with the press and about policy in general?
About policy. Dean Jeffries, would you like to field this question? Being that you are the dean of the school in Washington, D.C., that's advancing the work of policy for nurses.
Thank you for the question. I can speak for George Washington School of Nursing. We have a policy course across our programs, both baccalaureate, master's, and our DMP. I think it's very important. It is an essential in most of the nursing programs, but how policy is covered, whether it's by a course or a module, I think it varies across nationally. Do we need more policy? Absolutely. I would love to see competencies at the baccalaureate level, master's, and doctoral level, and making sure those competencies are met. So we have a long way to go, I would say, overall in nursing education. But now with the thrust, getting more nurses on boards, you know, 10,000 nurses on boards, we need voices. And today the Woodhull study represents that too, how we need to be more visible, be useful, and know more about policy and media training. Thank you.
Anyone else on the research panel like to address that, or here on the reaction panel? Okay, I think we got that covered because the dean did a great job. Thank you, Dean. Is there another question? Go ahead.
With the changing landscape of gender representation, i.e. more men in nursing, does anybody there anticipate that this shift will positively influence or negatively impact nursing's representation in the media?
Well, I've been tweeting that if 90% of nurses were men, would they be showing up in the media more? So that's a question that I have, but I will pass that question on to our panelists.
Pass it to the man.
I wonder which panelists.
By the way, I'm sorry that I can't quote the authors, but there's also another word called marticle. Goes along with mannels, which is about that most quotes are by men in articles. So we can put that out there. It's M-A-R-T-L-E.
I think it's interesting, and I don't claim to have data on this, and I find it just interesting, but also maybe a bit frustrating that, in fact, we still have more men quoted, even though in the field, in science and health journalism, in fact, there are more women. I don't have exact figures on me, but that's just true. The reporters and some of the editors. You're starting to see, Laura Helmuth here in Washington, who's, of course, the terrific health and science editor at the Washington Post. I mean, you're starting to see some change, which is good. But I think that it still comes down to who is put forward. It takes actually a lot of effort. I don't want to sound like, oh, this is just too hard. Everything's hard. But, Ed Yong, who's a reporter at The Atlantic, science reporter, fantastic reporter, actually did a census of his own work. He went back and looked. I don't remember what the time period was. I don't remember what the details were. I do remember that he saw some improvement with I buried the lead, as we say in journalism, of how many women he was quoting, in his stories. And, he was doing better, but not as well as he wanted. And he just posted on this recently. You can look it up. You need to be consciously looking at this. And so, if there are more men, I guess the good news might be that if there are more men, male nurses, then therefore more nurses would be quoted, but that would also mean that you're not really doing anything about the sex and gender problem. So I it's one of those unintended consequence kind of things, unfortunately. But
and I would say just unfortunately that inequality, sexism is a societal problem, not just in nursing, but also you'll find the similar things in journalism. Most J school students and those who are go into journalism right after college are women, but those who are the leaders of newsrooms are primarily white men. And the challenge becomes trying to overcome some of those obstacles that have been part of society for decades, and that will take a lot of work to break down those barriers. And it's important that organizations and individuals are very intentional about what they do to make sure that newsrooms, nursing images and representations in media are inclusive and representative. And it does mean being conscious, being very aware of what the biases are, and making sure that there is some kind of strategy to overcome those.
Next question, please.
Okay, here's kind of an interesting one. If you were to conduct a similar analysis of online-only content or television coverage of healthcare, do you think you would find a similar response? And what evidence, if any, do you have to back up that data?
Yeah, as Diana mentioned, in terms of methodology, we don't have that data, and it would be hard to make that projection. We welcome ideas for funding that study to those who are here in the room, and those who are watching live stream. We believe that we have just conducted a very important study, and that we will leverage those findings. But we have other ideas for future studies and ideas. Laura has something she'd like to add.
Yeah, and I would add that we would expect that we might see some differences, but one thing to keep in mind is that when organizations like the Pew Center have looked at kind of the media landscape, really the print legacy news outlets still tend to lead the agenda in terms of news. And so we might see some changes in terms of how TV news or online news is reporting, but we would expect that those print news outlets are still, you know, are still playing a pretty important role.
We don't have any further time for questions. We welcome those who have not had their questions answered to stay around if you'd like to speak to the researchers, or I don't know the time limitations or of our reaction panelists. Please join me in thanking our panelists up front: Crystal Williams, Chancellor, Yannick Rice-Lamb, Ivan Oransky. For further information of the research team, you have it here in front of you on this slide. Also, further, for those who have interest in the research brief as well as an infographic and bios, that is now live. You can go to go.gwu/.edu/Woodhull with a capital W. I'm Barbara Glickstein on behalf of George Washington University School of Nursing Center for Health Policy and Media Engagement. I invite my colleague and principal investigator of the study, Dr. Diana Mason, to join me in thanking everyone for joining us today.
Thank you, and thanks again to our funders, and we look forward to everybody's support into changing this so that in 20 more years we will not be able to say things have not changed. Thank you.
These findings have significant implications for health journalists who are not diversifying their sources. While the study focuses on nurses, the findings also apply to health professionals other than physicians. Being visible in the media and to the media is important if nurses are to be considered as having an important and valued voice on healthcare issues. The nursing profession is the largest group of health professionals in the United States, numbering close to 3.5 million, and 90% of nurses are women. As the largest profession, we perhaps have a valuable perspective that can make a difference to the public. Thank you for joining us today on HealthCetera. You can find us on Little Water Radio, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out our blog at healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. See you next time.